Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Born to Talk Radio Show. I'm your host, Marcia Witeka. Conversations plus connections equals community. Those are my three C's. The heart of my show is, what's your story? It's my belief we all have stories. Some are similar, others are uniquely different. Storytelling brings the passions of my guests to life through our conversations. So be prepared to be entertained, informed, and inspired. Welcome to today's show. Well, hi, everybody. And I just must tell you, if you've been following me for any length of time, you know that nonprofits are very near and dear to my heart. And today is another fine example. My guest today is Regan Williams. She is the co-founder and CEO of the nonprofit Seen and Heard. Welcome to the show, Regan.
Hello. It's so good to be here. Thank you, Marcia.
It is my pleasure. And it's so interesting how I meet people along the way, and we kind of met in an interesting way as well. But let's have you start off by letting people know a little bit about yourself. So please just tell us about yourself.
Absolutely, yeah. So my name is Regan Williams, and I am the leader of an emerging nonprofit organization here in Los Angeles called Seen and Heard. I have been in Los Angeles for a little over 20 years, and I actually live in Westchester, so I am your neighbor. And
yes,
I've been in Westchester. Yeah, so I've been in Westchester for about 15 years, and I just love it here. I have two children. So my oldest is a junior in college, and my youngest is heading off to UCLA in a few weeks, and so that's exciting. And I'm married. I've been married. We just celebrated our 22nd wedding anniversary on Saturday,
nice.
So
I've
been married for a while. And I have a dog, and I love walking around my neighborhood. I love walking my dog. I love getting to know my neighbors and my neighborhood. There's so much to offer in Los Angeles, and there's so many fun things to do in Westchester.
There are, and, you know, sometimes people hear the term Westchester, and depending upon what part of the country they live in, some people think that we're talking about New York. But we're
New
not.
York, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, but we're really talking about the community of Westchester, where Loyola Marymount University is located, which is just three blocks from my house. Like you said, we're neighbors. Mm-hmm. I was born and raised here, so I've lived in Westchester my entire life, and I love our community. So let's talk about you. Let's talk about what it is that you've done with Seen and Heard. So how did the foster care system first cross your radar?
Well, it's a funny story because about 20 years ago, right when I first moved to Los Angeles, I heard about a summer camp called Royal Family Kids Camp, and it was something that they were recruiting counselors for. And I just heard about it, and I love kids. I've been a dance teacher and a drama teacher, and I've worked with kids for a while before that period of time, and I thought, let's see what this is about. So I attended the trainings, and I went off to camp. And I think it was probably, they probably had camp up in Big Bear. And it was a week that absolutely changed my life. I got to see the joy, the sorrow, the resilience, the humor, all the different facets of young kids in foster care. The camp served kids, I think, ages 7 to 12, maybe. They may serve more kids now, but it was just kind of like that upper elementary age, and I had little campers that were assigned to me, and I just kind of hung out with them for a week and, you know, did s'mores and hikes and all the things, but really got to see up close and personal their lives and what they had experienced. And, you know, they would share heartache, they would share joys. They were just like any other kid, really, but just lacked the stability that most kids have. And so truly, Marcia, after that camp experience, my life would never be the same. It just, I don't know if you've ever had an experience like this where you learn about something. It could be anything. It could be the environment. Mm-hmm. It could be animals. It could be whatever. And once you run into something, you're like, this is my thing. This is my cause. This
right.
is where I'm going to put my energy. And it just changes your life.
Well, were all of these kids at this camp, were they all foster care kids?
Yes, so they were all kids that were in the foster care system. And, you know, some of them were living with relatives. That's called kinship care. Some of them were living with foster parents. And you know, it's possible that some of them had been reunified recently, you know, with their biological families and maybe you know, leaving the system and entering back into their lives. So it was a variety of different experiences, but the touchstone really was foster care. All of them had been affected in some way by the foster care system.
Interesting. So
yeah.
What action did that awareness lead you to?
So after that experience, where actually, Marcia, I met my husband at that camp. So he was a counselor at Royal Family. Yeah. So he was a counselor also. And it's funny because, you know, I was in the training with him and I didn't really notice him or anything. We had attended trainings together. And then when we were up at Big Bear, I saw him interacting with his campers and, you know, doing silly songs and taking kids for
mm-hmm.
hikes and playing basketball or whatever. And I kind of fell for him there. Like I was like, this is my person. And it's so cute because the girls that I was the counselor for kind of picked up on this and they were like, ooh, you like that guy. And so they would like go over and tell him, my husband, Matthew now, they would say like that girl likes you. And like, it was kind of this funny little thing where that's how we got on each other's radar. And so we started dating after that summer camp and we got married. And so what action that led to was getting married, number one, and finding my person. But number two, it planted a seed both in my heart and my husband's heart that we knew that we were going to come back to this area of work, and we were both really passionate about it. So we had two children, and we were like, okay, now it's going to be time for us to foster. We knew that both of us, we really wanted to bring another child into our home. And because I had mm-hmm. two boys, Marcia, I was like, I think I want to have a little girl. Like we were very specific about wanting to foster a girl. And, you know, I would like to say that my motives, of course, were true and good going into it. But
sure.
as I look back on that experience, I recognized that I was really looking to foster care to fulfill a need that I had rather than looking at foster care and saying, how can I help someone else, right? And so I sort of went in naively thinking like, oh, I'm gonna go in, I'm gonna foster to adopt. I've got my goal and my plan, and I'm gonna go in and adopt a little girl and then walk away. That is not the plan that happened. I ended up fostering, my husband and I ended up fostering some little girls over the course of a couple of years. And all of them were either reunified with their biological family or they were moved from our house to be placed in the care of a relative. And all of those things, Marcia, were really good things because
mm-hmm.
children do best in their families of origin for the most part. So this was a really good thing for them, but it was heartbreaking for me. And I learned so much through that heartbreak about how the most important thing is not my desires, my goals. It's really what is best for the child.
Right. So for people that have never fostered a child, is this mm-hmm. does this go through, because I don't know, does it go through the courts?
Yes.
Does it does go, it is a court action, correct? Okay.
Yes. So that's a great question. So a lot of folks don't know about this, so I'm glad you asked.
Yes.
So what
yes.
happens is a child is often removed from their home when they are experiencing neglect, when they're experiencing abuse. And so there's a variety of reasons why children come into care. I do want to mention
okay.
that it is often, the system is biased. The system, unfortunately, is overburdened. And the system is not always designed for biological families to be successful in reunification. And there's a lot of reasons for that. But I would say that there's a wide variety of reasons why children come into care. Some of them come into care and really shouldn't be there, and some should. For example, poverty is not a reason to remove a child from their home, right? But sometimes poverty is mistaken by well-meaning people for neglect, right? So, for example, if a child comes to school and they're maybe a little bit dirty or they don't have a lunch or, you know, and that happens, you know, day after day, a teacher might look at that and say, this child is being neglected. Well, maybe, maybe not. And so then when you have someone from the Department of Children and Family Services come to the home, if they make a certain assessment based on their observations, this is how a child winds up in foster care. And in Los Angeles County, we have the largest number of youth in foster care in the entire nation.
Wow.
Yeah. So to answer your question, it's really where, you know, the court has decided that the removal of the child from their home is correct and warranted. I think they have like 72 hours to make that determination if this was a valid reason for removal or not. If the court determines that it's not a valid reason, that child goes home. If the court determines that there's still some questions or they want to do some further investigation, that child is placed in foster care. And so there are foster parents who get who receive those children when they come into the system. Does that kind of answer your question a little bit?
Well, yes, but I guess the only other follow-up I would have to that is, so Susie's in the third grade and Bobby's in the fifth grade, and it's been determined that they need to come out of this home. Do they both go together to foster care? I mean, they don't separate the siblings, do they?
Yes, unfortunately that happens.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Oh, wow. That's interesting.
Yeah, and that's part of the tragedy and the trauma of being in the child welfare system. I think that the department really does their very best to make sure that children are placed together. So it's obviously a priority, but imagine this. You're a social worker, and you've got two kids that are sitting in your office, and they're waiting to be placed someplace. That social worker is calling home after home after home. And so that social worker has to find a home that can take two children, a boy and a girl, with specific ages, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. There are some foster parents that are saying, we're only taking girls, or we're only taking boys, or we're only taking one child, or we're only taking teenagers, or we're only taking babies. So it's really challenging for social workers to find placement where both siblings can stay together.
No kidding. So what was your experience as a foster parent informed you in your current work at Seen and Heard?
So my experience as a foster parent has helped me immensely in the creation and the work of Seen and Heard. And I think it really was born out of my experience recognizing that the kids that were in my home were children for me to love but not to own or have or like have a, you know what I mean? Like they're my kids, or sorry, they're not my kids, but I love them like they're my kids, right? Mm-hmm. And so it helped me actually prioritize the well-being of the child in my home without expectations. And that has helped me as a leader. That's helped me so much in the development and co-founding of a nonprofit, because my ego, of course, I'm a human being, so my ego gets involved in my work all the time. But because of my experience as a foster parent, I recognize that this organization, although it was started by me and my husband, is not ultimately mine to take care of forever and ever and ever. So that leaves me more room to collaborate, to allow other voices to inform the work we do, to imagine the work being carried forward by another steward. Does that make sense? So it gives me a lot of freedom, and it allows the community to own the effort rather than just me personally own
that. That makes sense. Why don't you share what the mission is and how it helps youth in foster care?
Yeah, so Seen and Heard exists to promote the professional character of youth in foster care. And by professional character, I mean those sort of social, emotional, EQ skills that oftentimes youth that have experienced trauma don't have access to. And so what we do at Seen and Heard is we use the performing arts as a way to impart those people skills. And by people skills, I mean emotional management, emotional regulation, communication skills, setting boundaries, tolerating stress, like all of those things that youth from more stable or traditional backgrounds see modeled for them or have access to. But for kids that have grown up in traumatic situations, whether familial or systemic, they don't have the same kind of access. And so Seen and Heard works with youth ages 16 to 23 specifically in this area so that they can be successful in their work or higher education.
So that's interesting, the age that you just described, because I'm a little bit surprised that at 21 they don't age out of foster care. So they can still be in the foster care program up to the age of 23. Did I understand that correctly?
So technically, youth can emancipate from the system at the age of 18. Legally, they can say, I don't want any more services. I'm sick of you guys.
Okay.
I don't want anything else to do with this. So some young people will choose to leave at 18. It's encouraged that youth stay involved with the department until they're 21 years old. And then there are agencies and organizations that will serve youth up until the age of 23, 24, 25, sometimes like 26.
No kidding.
With services.
Wow.
Yeah, with services. Now, not all of them do that, but, you know, it's up to the nonprofit to determine. But technically, the involvement of the Department of Children and Family Services ends at the age of 21. When a child is 21, the department is no longer it doesn't have any authority or guardian, like it's not their guardian, right? It's not supervising them at all.
I see.
Yeah.
Interesting. And do the teachers stay involved? Is there a coordination when kids are in foster care and they're in the fourth grade at their elementary school? Do the teachers know that?
So, yeah, teachers are aware, hopefully, because there's usually like a foster care liaison on the campus. There's an administrator that tracks that information. But, you know, one of the great things that Los Angeles has to offer, and this is actually a national organization, but CASA, which stands for a court-appointed special advocate, is often a person who can go between parties and help coordinate and assist care and connection for the child. And so, yes, there are teachers that are trying to support a young person as best they can. And sometimes that means that a teacher can actually help to advocate for a child to stay at the school rather than be moved. So when a child is in foster care, it's possible that they move placements, right, where maybe the foster parent's like, I no longer want to be caring for this child. I'm going to call the Department of Children and Family Services and ask for this child to be placed in another foster home. Well, when that happens, that kid could be moving 30 miles away. And if that kid
is in high
school, that means they have to move high school. So this is where CASA, and this is where a teacher can write a letter to the judge and say, I am requesting or suggesting or advising that this child stay at the school, and here's why. And the judge can read that and make a better choice about where that child can go to school. So, what we do at Seen and Heard is a little bit outside of that education part, but we're certainly involved in advocating and finding resources for the youth that are in
Wonderful.
Our program.
So tell me there's got to be some obstacles. What are some of the specific obstacles that you have in the foster care system?
Yeah. So young people in foster care, especially those that are in their teens and approaching aging out of the system, are often prone to negative outcomes that, you know, kids from more stable backgrounds aren't as susceptible to. So, you know, chronic exposure to neglect and abuse leads to a variety of negative outcomes. Some of the specific ones that we often see are mental health challenges. So, mm-hmm. for example, foster youth face higher rates of mental health concerns, so between 30 and 80% higher than the general population. Foster youth are 5 times more likely to report suicidal ideation as compared with their peers. And 25% of youth that exit the foster care system suffer from PTSD. And so a lot of what we see as far as obstacles have so much to do with mental health. And so a lot of the young people that we see that come into our program, you know, are experiencing anxiety, experiencing depression, and experiencing just like very deep levels of discouragement. So one of the things that we do at Seen and Heard is our focus is to really expand a young person's horizons about what they are capable of doing and what is out there waiting for them. So one of our core values, all people are inherently valuable and have the right to dream. So we recognize that youth that have experienced trauma, the way that young people have in foster care, are often thinking, there's nothing really out there for me. I'm just going to get a job at like Wingstop or whatever, and I'm just going to like survive. And we're trying to switch the mindset to like, you can actually thrive. And we're providing some tools for you to be able to really stop and consider what you want for your life versus how do I survive? Right? And so obviously the job is important and we want the kids to be able to work, but the tools and the practices they're learning at Seen and Heard are the things that are going to enable them to persevere in difficult workplaces. They're going to be the things that will help get them promoted, help get them those raises, and help them dream a little bit bigger than just their minimum wage 9-to-5 job, and help them to really believe that they are capable of more, right?
And deserving.
And so what we're really looking, yes, and deserving. And so what Seen and Heard does is both mental health and self-esteem, but really what we're hoping to achieve is bringing young people out of that poverty line, right, and bringing them into the middle class and the upper class where they're making more than minimum wage, right? They're getting those promotions. They're lifting their families and communities out of poverty, because all of those things, the social emotional things, are what employers are implicitly looking for in the people that they hire. Are there jobs out there? Yeah, there's jobs out there. But it's hard for a young person who has experienced trauma after trauma after trauma to stick with an employer that's kind of a jerk, right? And we've all been there, right? We've all had jobs where it's really hard to work for someone, and we usually have a caregiver or a loving supporter that says, you know what, you can power through this, you can communicate your boundaries clearly, you can ask for what you need, you can face a difficult day and go back again and persevere. But imagine being a kid without that kind of support.
Yeah,
right?
It must be awful. It's hard enough when you have that support. So
why should
people be concerned about this issue in particular?
Well, you know, to be honest, Marcia, like as they say, the kids are not all right. The kids are not all right, right? So we look at, there was an article that came out a couple of days ago, I think, maybe in The Atlantic or The New Yorker, I don't remember, but it was just about the state of mental health in young adults in America right now. And, you know, there's a lot of different hypotheses as to why that is. Is it social media? Is it the economy? Like, there's a variety of reasons, right? But if people in stable circumstances with housing and people around them that are loving and supportive of them, if those young people and kids are struggling, imagine what it's like for those, you know, who are not supported and who don't have families that are speaking into their lives. And so if we believe that that we care about our children, we can absolutely care about those that are not our children, but really truly belong to the community. Because if those kids aren't all right, it affects our lives on a broader scale. So previously I mentioned about some of those obstacles that youth face, right? And I touched on mental health. But you know, 50% of the unhoused population in this country have spent time in foster care. 50%.
Wow.
So that's half of the folks that, you know, we see driving around. And so it is our issue, right? We can't just pretend like it's not something that affects our lives. So, you know, a lot of folks often, you know, focus on the impact to society, but I think the deeper issue is really they're human beings who are inherently valuable. Like, we should be caring about our neighbors, right?
Absolutely.
And so just because that kid isn't our kid doesn't mean that we shouldn't care about them. And the reason why we're focusing on this age range at Seen and Heard, the 16 to 23-year-olds, is those kids aren't really seen as kids anymore. And I hate that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like,
a 16-year-old is still a kid.
Oh, yes. Yeah, absolutely. But when that kid looks a certain way and acts a certain way, our society is much more likely to write them off and call them troubled and call them a problem. And I just refuse to see them that way. That's somebody's kid. And that's our responsibility as a community. When that parent can't parent, it's our responsibility to try to follow through and provide and see that those children's needs get met.
Yeah. So you mentioned some obstacles in our city in general, and how have these affected our city, but also you personally as the CEO? That was a deep breath.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'll be honest with you. This is hard work. It's really hard work. Mm-hmm. Because we really do have boots on the ground. So it's not just that we are dropping resources from an airplane. You know, we're actually next to young people and we're bearing witness to their stories. We're listening deeply. We're trying our best to provide support. And that is really challenging work because it's getting up close and personal with people that are hurting.
Sure.
So the obstacles that our young people are facing are manifold. A lot of them, it centers around financial obstacles and housing. And so those are obviously things that you and I can see here living in Los Angeles that affect us. The day-to-day, right? We're seeing that all around us, folks that are priced out, and there's not affordable housing in this city. There's a lot of folks that are unhoused. And so, as I said, 50% of those kids are coming from foster care. So when we are talking to 16 to 23-year-olds about housing, we're doing our best to connect them to services that we know and trust here. So we're providing those connections. But how it's impacted me personally as a CEO is there have been periods of time where I feel very small and I feel very helpless because Seen and Heard does a specific thing. And we, like, for example, we don't provide housing right now. And so when I have a kiddo who's telling me about, you know, they're going to be out of their apartment in 6 weeks, that's a burden that feels at times overwhelming. But that's only because, Marcia, I'm forgetting that I am part of a broader community and that there are other organizations out there. I could name so many that are doing the work of housing, right? And so if I lose sight of the fact that I'm part of a network, then I feel overwhelmed and I feel small. But if I keep in mind that I'm part of a greater web, a greater fabric of community members who care, then I can really be encouraged and stay the course. And I think the same is true for the young people we work with, right? So our job at Seen and Heard is to remind them that you are not alone, that there's me, there's your teachers, there's these people, there's those people, that you too, kiddo, are part of a network here in Los Angeles. Let me introduce you to this organization or that organization. And the way I like to envision it, Marcia, is really like I grew up in the 1980s, okay? So I grew up riding my bike around my neighborhood and, you know, dropping my bike on someone's front lawn and running inside and getting juice and talking to the mom and then going back out and riding around with my friends, right? So the neighborhood I grew up with, I feel very thankful that I had the privilege of safety. And what I'm trying to do and what other nonprofits are trying to do in Los Angeles is to be that neighborhood. So we have kids that are referred to us from other organizations that are also doing great things. So we're sort of that neighborhood for young people in foster care. So they pop from my organization, and then they find another organization, and this one does housing, and this one does whatever, right? So we're creating that community in real time in our city. And that's something I'm really proud of.
That's a great network. I don't know if I had mentioned this earlier, but just in case I hadn't, for those of you that are listening, I really do suggest you visit the website. It's simply as it sounds, seenandheard.org, and you can go to that to the website and see more about this. So you've been doing this a while. What have you learned as a leader of being part of this organization?
Well, I touched a little bit previously just about how foster care has informed the ego aspect of trying to remember that it's not about me. And that's really helpful, I think, as far as being a leader that can collaborate, that can listen, that can be open to new ideas, is keeping that in mind. I do try to detach my identity from my work, and that's hard when you're a founder, right? So when you're a founder CEO, there's a sense of identity that's attached to it, and I work against that every day because that is not helpful. It's not really helpful to the people that we work with. And so I do try to have a healthy detachment from my work, and at the same time, I put everything into it too. Like I feel a great responsibility because and I'll, you know, maybe touch on this a little bit later, but if I'm serving a population that's hustling every day and just working so hard against the odds, there's no excuse for me not to do the same. My goodness, right? Like from a place of privilege and access, there's no excuse for me. So I do have a really good work ethic, and also I have a healthy sense of identity that I try to detach from Seen and Heard. The other thing I've learned as a leader is to, you know, a lot of folks talk about work-life balance, and I'm sure you've had some people on the, you know, your podcast talk about the same thing, and that's hard. We're all striving to do that. But lately, Marcia, I've been realizing that it's not enough for me to not check emails on the weekends. Like, I've gotten so much better about that over the years, but what I'm noticing is that I have to also discipline my mind not to ruminate on obstacles at work, right? Not to spend a Saturday afternoon sort of checked out from a conversation with my son thinking about what to do about this or that or this project or this grant application that's due or this board issue or whatever it is. So I'm learning that I have to create mental margin and really be disciplined mentally when I am not at my desk. Right? Because I've seen a lot of leaders really truly get burnt out or consumed and really neglect their friends or their family or their life because this work can become all consuming because, Marcia, it's never going to end. Like the foster care crisis is not going to end. I mean, a lot of folks hope and pray that it will. And of course, I join them in those thoughts and prayers. I want it to end, but I can't see a way that it will. And until then, it's very easy to fall into this idea that then I can't stop working. And that doesn't serve the youth either if I'm burnt out. Because burnt out leaders make for really crappy leaders. They get judgmental. Yeah. They assume things. They get short with people, short-tempered. They get impatient. And I absolutely am susceptible to all of those things. I'm a human being. So I notice that if I'm not creating mental margin, I can easily fall into that trap.
That makes sense. Has anything surprised you along the way in this? Because how long have you been doing this? Remind me again, because I know you might have said it.
Yeah, we've only been around for 5 years, but I've been in the area of child welfare. Like Seen and Heard has only been around for 5 years, but I've been in child welfare for the past 13 years. So So it's been, you know, as a CASA, as a community organizer, as a foster parent. So I've been around doing this for some time. But what surprises me, how funny kids are. Oh my gosh, how joyous, how funny, how this work has surprised me in so many ways and filled me with so much joy. And what I mean by that is what a blessing it is to be a witness to a young person who is striving, who is not giving up, who is overcoming the obstacles. It's like watching a shooting star. It feels like magic. Like, it really feels like magic. I feel so thankful to be in the presence of someone with a story that started in one place and is ending someplace completely different, and to their strength and their inner resilience and their talent and resolve. All these things I get to be a witness to. And so I feel so lucky to be able to be in the presence of young people who are still continuing to get up every day and fight for their lives, you know?
You know,
because that's what it is. I know it sounds dramatic, but that's what it is.
No, I don't think it sounds dramatic. I'm putting myself back a million years ago when my children were in school. My kids are a lot older than yours. And I was one of those PTA moms that, I mean, I worked I was a PTA volunteer for, I don't know, 20 years or however many. And I also work for the YMCA, which also supports youth. But, you know, it does. So that's another important thing. But do you work with schools regardless of whether they're public or private, if they're parochial, are all schools, do they all know about this? Is this something that is just obviously a tenant that's involved with any school, regardless of the type of school that it is, since these are school-age kids for the, you know, the last 16 to 18-year-olds?
Yeah, so right now we do not have any formal partnerships with, like, LAUSD or any of the, you know, we don't have any formal partnerships with schools. And that's not because we don't want to. It's that we've prioritized right now, at least in the early stages of this organization, we've prioritized FFAs or resource family agencies. So these are agencies that are working directly with foster care to provide housing, for example. So our partnerships are primarily agencies, but we're very much open to collaborating with schools that are serving at Promise Youth. And so, it's just not something we've pursued yet, but we're absolutely open to.
Right. It's interesting. Are you a member of the chamber by any chance? I'm just curious.
No, I'm not. I would love to know more about that.
About that.
Yeah,
you and I will talk about that because that's just, it's another outlet for you, just like you and I just privately talking about the fact that I'm a Rotarian and we are neighbors and Rotarians, a service above self, and I think that might be another great way of connecting with others. Because I think connections, well, for me personally, connections are everything to me. And since I've never met a stranger, and I'm comfortable talking to anybody, that surprises you, right? I was born to talk. So there you have it. So I know what fuels my fire, but what fuels your fire that keeps you motivated to do this work? It's a lot.
Yeah, it is a lot. I mean, going back to mentioning my time at that foster or that camp for foster youth. That was the flame that started it, and it just continues to build as I continue to put myself in proximity with young people that are in the foster care system. So what fuels my fire is being inspired by their determination, being inspired by their successes for sure. I think that my personal faith definitely fuels my fire as well. I feel like our core values at Seen and Heard also helps keep me motivated. I mean, that's why organizations should have values, like, because you've got a mission statement, which is your North Star. But I feel like values are things that help guide internal and external work, right? So our core values
right.
are
why don't you mention
all
something
people.
About those core values? I think that that's an interesting thing that's on your page. Talk a little bit about your core values.
Yeah, so I mentioned the first one previously, that all people are inherently valuable and have the right to dream. That means that we do not discard kids that are in the system, and there's no expiration date, right? Like, when you've been affected by that level of trauma, you may need care. So they are valuable regardless of what kind of statistical outcomes that they may present at the end of their 18 weeks with us, right? So we have kids
Is that
that
how,
move on to
colleges. Let me interrupt you really quickly. So there is a time of 18 weeks. So that's how long they're with you?
Yes. So our program, our traditional professional development program, is 18 weeks. And then once they graduate from that 18-week program, they then are eligible to continue to maintain that deep connection with Seen and Heard as alumni leaders. And there's a variety of different trainings and opportunities, both paid and volunteer, for our alumni leaders.
Hmm.
And then if they're not interested in leadership, that's totally fine too. They also have the ability to enroll in phase 3, which is a 10-week one-on-one multimodal coaching program that is client-centered, meaning they get to determine what things they want to work on, and they have one-on-one weekly coaching sessions with our director of wellness. And so they get the opportunity to just do that more in-depth, personalized work because the first 18 weeks is them journeying together in community through those cohorts, where they're learning different skills every week together, which is a great way to build connection and community. So we don't just provide those professional character skills. We're also providing community. So that's kind of what that 18-week program looks like and then beyond. But, yeah, go ahead.
How does performing arts relate to that?
Yeah, that's such a good question. So our other core value is arts have the ability to restore and propel individuals forward into their life, right? So we believe that the arts are a way to have young people tell their story, to be seen and heard. The way young people are seen and heard is through artistic expression, through communication, and through work, which looks like, specifically, that looks like at the end of their 18 weeks, we have a graduation celebration where each student presents a final project. And that final project can be anything they want it to be. So it could be an essay that they read. It could be movement-based or dance-based. It can be a song that they decide to write and sing. It can be a visual, like a painting. It can be a collage. We've had all kinds of amazing pieces that young people create. We have kids that are already, you know, in music classes, and so they bring a special creation. We have kids that are really interested in visual art, so they bring a collage or a painting. And so really what it is, Marcia, is that final project is a way for them to be seen and heard. And it also prepares them for what will be expected from them at work too, right? So, for example, if a young person wants to go in and make a request for a raise from their boss, man, that is a scary, scary situation. Like,
you
so
bet.
That final project is practice. If a young person can get up in front of a group of like 40, 50 people and be able to present, we prepare them for this, obviously, but to be able to just read off a page or present something, that's really building their confidence so that they can go in and speak to their manager about a shift change. They can go in and ask for a raise. They can do all kinds. They're growing in confidence, which has a direct relationship to their professional lives as well. So some people think, oh, the performing arts or the arts, like, great, but I'm not an artsy person. No, no, you don't have to be an artsy person to understand that these are transferable skills. They're always transferable skills.
Boy, I can I have to step in here and say how much I relate to what you specifically just said on a personal level.
Tell me.
You're a dancer, right? Am I right about that?
Yeah, so I went to NYU and I studied musical theater, and so that was part of my education was dance. I love to dance.
Well, so interestingly enough, I've mentioned this sometimes depending upon if it's relevant. So I have two children. I have a son and I have a daughter, and my daughter loved performing, and she did that at Westchester High School. She was Juliet in Romeo and Juliet. She loved being on the stage, right? And so now it's time to prepare for college, and she was a theater arts major at UCLA, and that's what she got her degree in. And I know I'm digressing here, but it's in relevance to what you're saying. My husband was an engineer, and so he was definitely not a theater arts kind of person. And she is in her 17th year of commercial construction, which had, as one could say, well, what does that have to do with theater arts? And I tell people
everything.
Because she just performs on a different stage. And
that's
so if you've gone to school and you've been able to perform, many of her classmates became attorneys, you have to have the confidence to be able to stand in front of others and be convincing and compelling and confident and all of those three C's I just mentioned. And so when we talk about these phases that your graduates are doing, it makes a lot of sense because it sounds to me like there's also summer programs, right? I mean, is phase three a summer program?
So phase three it actually happens in the summer, but it also happens during the fall session. So we run it in conjunction with the other program. But, you know, summer stuff is like really like fun because we cease our 18-week program over the summer. So we run the 18-week program twice a year. And so the summer we take a break and we do like community building, continuing education opportunities. But specifically, we do a driver's ed program. So
that's
one
neat.
Of the things. Yeah, because young people in foster care don't really have access to behind-the-wheel driver's ed. It's really hard for DCFS to coordinate those kinds of services because social workers are already really, really burdened with all the requirements that they need to get completed for young people before they exit. And so oftentimes the driver's license is just a really complicated piece of that puzzle. And so we allow all of our graduates access to behind the wheel training, studying for the driver's ed exam, like the written exam, and then help the day they have their exam at the DMV. And so we kind of walk them through that process. And it's like kind of a motivation for them to finish the program too, because we don't provide that as a service for the broader community because we don't have the resources to do that at this time. Hopefully in the future we can, but right now we only offer that to our graduates.
So I just want to be, and I'm sorry if you've explained this and it just didn't stick with my mind.
They're
in foster care. They're living in someone's home. You were a foster parent. They're living in someone's home. Doesn't that mom and dad or that mom or whomever, does it have to be a mom and a dad to go into foster care? Can it just be a mom or just be a dad?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It could just be it could be just an adult, like someone that's
an adult,
yeah.
Okay, so let's just say that this isn't a responsible adult. Or it's a mom and a dad and they have two children and they're fostering two other children that are siblings. Don't they just... I guess what I'm confused about, so you'll help me with this. Can't they just automatically do all the things that you've just discussed, like getting them enrolled in a DMV and all of those different kinds of things, or are they not allowed to do those things?
So, no, they are allowed. They can assist with all of those things. There's a variety of obstacles that foster parents face. So, one of those obstacles could be that they may not have access to vital records. So it's possible that the foster parent just received So the foster parent maybe has only had this kid in their home for 6 weeks or 3 months, and they're still waiting on getting those vital documents from the department. So that's one obstacle. It's just like, do they have the paperwork? So it's really like a wild goose chase for a lot of foster parents to be able to find a lot of that documentation. So that's the first thing. The second thing is, you know, oftentimes the foster parent may not have the bandwidth to actually get that kind of assistance or work done. And it doesn't mean that they don't want to. It means they're also fostering or they're parenting two other kids. They're also working a full-time job and they're a single parent. So it's also an issue of like capacity and having the time to be able to do that. Another obstacle could be that they don't have a car themselves. And then finally, it could be that the foster parent's like, that's not my job. Like, that's not something that I'm legally required to do, so I'm not going to do that. And that sounds heartless. I would say that that's not the majority of foster parents, but there's some that are just kind of doing it. Yeah, there's some that are just doing it because, I mean, that it's a paycheck. I mean, that's a reality.
I hate to say it, but... That is what I was going to ask, and maybe you said that, and in the process of me paying attention, I lost this. So if you are a foster parent, you do receive some kind of financial compensation?
Yeah. So you get paid from the Department of Children and Family Services. So you get paid a rate based on the child's age and any sort of special needs or requirements that child has, whether it's behavioral or, you know, so yeah. So there are people that are fostering just for the money. I would say that that's not the majority.
I would hope not.
True.
Yes.
Yeah. But
and do they look at your income? So that foster parent, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but that foster parent, they both have exceptional jobs. They don't need the money. Is the amount of money that they get paid in the system, does it look at that or does it not matter that you get this amount of money whether you have money or you don't have money?
Correct. It's that same rate for somebody who has two family income versus a single parent income versus...
I see.
Whatever. Yeah, it's the same amount.
Oh, that's good to know because I wasn't really clear about that. So
yeah, it's complicated.
It does sound well, but it's a bureaucracy, and I don't mean that in a negative way.
Yeah.
But I mean there's systems in place, and I understand that, and I know that you know as I mentioned that the community can certainly learn more about this by visiting your Seen and Heard website. But how can I help you further your mission? Is there anything specifically that I can do or that others can do to help you with that?
Thank you so much for asking, Marcia. I really appreciate that. Yes, we're always looking for helpers. And so, you know, there's a variety of ways to stay informed about our work. So one of the ways to stay sort of aware of current events or particular programs or things that we're up to is following us on Instagram. So our account is at Seen and Heard LA. And I'm sure you'll probably link that. Yeah, so that's a way to stay in touch with us. You can also email me, reagan@seenandheard.org.
Let's spell that name because people aren't going to know how to spell your name. So it's R-E-G-A-N. That's Reagan.
Yeah.
Don't add an A there.
Yep.
It's R-E-G-A-N Williams. Right. But here's the other thing, and I will make sure that this is on my blog. I've already had that prepared. People can donate, and I am going to link that donate tab so that if people are listening and say, you know, a way I can maybe support you guys is to make a financial donation because, maybe you don't even live in Los Angeles, but you're listening to this and you're thinking, whoa, this sounds like something I'd like to get behind. Or maybe you're listening to something like this and you're thinking, gosh, I need to get in touch with Reagan Williams directly because maybe where I live in Montana, maybe we need to be doing something like this for the people in our community. So, you know, I will make sure that people know how to get in touch with you because I think it's really important. And I just,
you
did touch on this just a little bit earlier, but I want to just kind of go back to this for a moment because, you know, you meant, it's clear that anybody that's listening to this understands that you have an enormous amount of professional responsibility, and you have your own family. So there are segments of our lives. But what I'm curious to know is, when you're not doing your professional stuff, what do you like to do that just sort of enhances your personal life?
That's a great question. I will answer that in 1 second. I just want to go back really quickly to
the previous question
about how can the community further help our mission. If you're listening and you maybe are retired and you have a little extra time on your hands or you're in between jobs, we are also always looking for folks that can serve on our board. We are we have an amazing board of five individuals who are giving their heart and soul to the work we do. We also need folks that maybe have a background in finance or real estate or, law, legal stuff. Like, all of those people would be such a blessing to our organization. So I just wanted to do a little plug for folks that maybe, hey, I can't give money, but I can give time. Or, you know, if you want to be a monthly donor, $25 a month, it really helps us. So back to your other question. How do I balance my professional life and personal life? I would say that I really enjoy being outdoors. I love physical activity. It really helps with stress reduction. So I like to work out. I like to go for long walks. And I remember speaking with you and finding out that you love walking too, and that you go 3 miles a day, right? Like,
over.
Is that right?
Yeah. Yes, I do.
Gosh.
Because we are neighbors, and you're familiar where Google is located on Bluff Creek Drive. I literally drive down there every single day, 7 days a week. And I walk over 3 miles a day, because it just clears my mind. You know, it allows me to see, oh, look at the butterflies. Oh, look at that cool dog. Oh, when was the last time I saw a Dalmatian? Holy cow. There's three dog parks down there, you know. And and because of our close proximity to where we both live, and the fact that big organizations like Google, like YouTube, like Yahoo, they're all down there in Playa Vista, near where both of us live. It's a blessing, and because, like I mentioned earlier, because I've always lived here, I appreciate being outside and working at the Y. You know, I worked at the Y for 10 years when I retired from the PTA, that non-pay job. But, you know, so there's a lot of different places where young people can get involved. And a lot of these places also provide financial assistance. So you've got a 17-year-old that would really benefit from going to the YMCA and swimming laps.
Absolutely.
But they can't afford it. You know, they can be assisted in things like that. So, and I think that, like,
and
you
thank
had
you
mentioned
for what
earlier,
you've done. Oh, I was just going to say thank you, Martha, Marsha, for what you've done for the community already. Like, just being on the PTA, that's part of community care, right? Being at the Y, that's part of community care. And so I really appreciate that you already, this is already on your radar, right? So I love that you do that.
Well, I was very fortunate, you know, in that my husband, rest his soul, had a career with Hughes and then Raytheon, so I didn't have to work to help pay our mortgage, and so it allowed me the privilege, and I do see it that way. I'm not saying that to be boastful, but I see that was a privilege that allowed me to be so community driven in this community that I love so much, and that means a lot, you know, because everybody doesn't have the ability to be able to do that, I've been doing this for 9 years, and as you can imagine, if a weekly show for 9 years, I've met some remarkable.
I didn't know you'd been doing it for 9 years.
Three years in Westchester, 3 years in that Paradise building when I was actually on YouTube and actually in a studio. But once I moved over to Blog Talk Radio, which is where we are now, that's allowed me to have people visit me in their pajamas, and nobody will ever know because we can't see you.
Listen,
but
I'm fully dressed.
I want to just thank you. I want to thank you for this personal connection and sharing what mm-hmm. is such a passion for you.
Thank
it's
you.
Clear. Anyone
Thank
listening
you.
To this can see that and hear that and
Thank
feel
you.
That. And I'm grateful
I
for this
I appreciate you,
Marcia.
Well,
thank you.
I'm so grateful for you, and thank you for inviting me on. It's been a pleasure, and thank you for giving Seen and Heard a platform. I really appreciate
bet.
That.
You bet. And I will see where else I can connect you with others. And I think
Thanks.
that's something that you and I will do in the future, because we are neighbors and finding
we
different
are.
Ways of being
yeah.
connected. And so we're going to have to take a walk, okay, when you're not too
that
busy doing 12,000 other things. But everybody, I hope
you
you've enjoyed listening to this and listening to
yeah.
Reagan. And once again, I want to spell Reagan's name. It is R-E-G-A-N, Williams with an S. So look her up. Look up Seen and Heard.
Yeah.
I will make sure that you see that link on the on my blog. And just thank you once again for making my Monday so beautiful. I've enjoyed every moment of this.
Oh, thank you, Marcia. It's a privilege, and thank you for the work you do, just elevating people's voices, too.
Thank you. All right, everybody. Well, believe it or not, this is the last Monday in August, and then we move over to, what is that, Labor Day? So I don't think I'm going to do a show next week. I think I'm going to labor by myself. So we'll see what happens. But I do thank you all for listening and just being a part of my family. So I'm going to say goodbye for now, everybody. Have a wonderful rest of your week. Bye-bye now, everybody.
This summer, skip the shuttle to the rideshare lot at LAX and get picked up curbside in a luxury SUV. I'm Will Coleman, CEO of Alto. We've redefined your airport ride with professional employee drivers, a consistent fleet of SUVs, and plenty of luggage space in every Alto. Take your time with your bags. Your Alto will always wait as long as you need, and the first 5 minutes are on us. Try your first ride free with code SUMMER. Download the Alto app or visit ridealto.com/radio to learn more.
Hey, it's Ryan Seacrest. Life comes at you fast, which is why it's important to find some time to relax. A little you time. Enter Chumba Casino. With no download required, you can jump on anytime, anywhere for the chance to redeem some serious prizes. So treat yourself with Chumba Casino and play over 100 online casino-style games, all for free. Go to ChumbaCasino.com to collect your free welcome bonus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.